Good morning, Los Angeles, and welcome to another edition of the Weekend Warrior Show. I'm your host, Dr. Robert Clapper. I'm an orthopedic surgeon at Cedars-Sinai for 31 years. I spent this past week surfing the wild waves in Hawaii. I'm going to tell you all about that. And I had something in a Japanese restaurant in Hawaii that was the greatest combination of something from Hawaii and something from New York. Wow. I'll tell you what it is. It was a sushi roll. You know, with the seaweed and the rice and the whole bit. But on the menu, it said, you know, they call it California roll. They call it spicy tuna roll. They have all kinds of things. It was called a bagel roll. Now, how the hell can you roll up a bagel in sushi? Well, what they were getting to is lox, which is smoked salmon, cream cheese, and an onion rolled up in a sushi roll. And then they cut it up into tiny little pieces. Amazing. Which made me think, where's the best place in L.A. to get a bagel, lox, and cream cheese? I'm going to tell you. My mouth is watering already. Because you got to have a raw onion on top. That really sets the tone. Anyway, I'm so excited. Today, my guest calling in at 7:15 is the great Matt Unger. He is the best in his field at running a car dealership. And I know this firsthand because for years he's been my guy. Way back when Max Kellerman was promoting the dealership at Lexus in Santa Monica, that's how I learned about it from Max. But this is not a show about the car business, although we can talk about that when he comes in, you know, comes on the line. But today, I just can't stop thinking about Kobe and how he has affected all of our lives. So I just keep talking about what it is that is his legacy. When I knew that Matt Unger was coming on, it made me think, one of Kobe's lasting legacies, obviously, is his Mamba mentality. He played with a chip on his shoulder. He used to say he knew he had all this God-given talent, but he still was going to play like he was the 12th man off the bench. This drive to succeed, it really touches us all more than the basketball. And let me tell you, what I love most about you guys in the Weekend Warrior Nation is that it's early on Saturday. You're going to the gym, you're going to work, you're driving the Uber car, the Lyft car, whatever it is that you guys are doing, you're working. You've got that fire inside. You're not in bed sleeping. And you all can relate to hard work. Well, that chip on your shoulder, that drive. Matt Unger, when you look in his history, he's a world record holder in volleyball. Here's the deal. This is a sport dominated by people who are tall, 6'4", 6'5", 6'8". That's who plays volleyball, beach volleyball and indoor volleyball. Matt Unger is my height, 5'10", 5'11". He's not tall. How does a smaller player, it's not that he's short, but he's shorter than those other players, how does he succeed to the extent? He beat Karch Karai, the greatest volleyball player ever to come out of America, probably ever. Matt Unger beat him. World records in assists. They have a great volleyball tournament every summer in Manhattan Beach called the Six Man, which is kind of a combination of Mardi Gras because of the costume. And playing beach volleyball, dressed up in these wacky outfits. But it's legit. Luke Walton is on the same team. It's actually called the Lakers. They wear Laker uniforms. It's hilarious. He's been a 7-time champion of the Six Man. That's not happening just because you got good looks. It's happening because you have a talent. So this whole idea of playing with a chip on your shoulder, particularly when it comes to size and not being so tall, made me think all week. Okay, where in art, where in sports, and certainly where in my life of surgery, do you see this chip on the shoulder related to size? Well, in the NBA, The smallest player to ever play. He was 5'3" was Muggsy Bogues. Wait till you hear the sound bites I'm going to play from Muggsy Bogues, who played for 14 seasons. He guarded Michael Jordan. He actually blocked Patrick Ewing, who's 7 feet tall. Muggsy Bogues. But his sound bite where he says, people say I was going to have to adjust to the NBA because I'm only 5'3". You know what Muggsy Bogues said? I ain't worried about that. They're going to have to adjust to me. Oh, my God. It's so inspiring to hear him talk about not being intimidated. You know why? Because his mom told him, it's not the size of your stature that matters. It's the size of your heart. That's exactly right. Passione. That's what you want. What about in art? Well, who else was 5'3"? I thought about it. Prince, he wasn't so tall. Woody Allen. There's all kinds of short people that are out there. But the shortest who had the biggest impact on my life was Paul Simon. 5'3". Broke up the band with Garfunkel in 1970 at the height of their fame. Probably a difficult guy to be with. Who knows? Maybe that shortness lit something up in that guy and gave him a chip on his shoulder to create some of the greatest songs ever. You're going to hear his interview with Dick Cavett. He's so amazing. He says to Dick Cavett, I'm working on this song right now called Still Crazy. Maybe you can even help me out a little bit. And then you just hear his ability and his genius, his talent is just incredible, and his confidence. Clapper Vision, again relatable to Kobe, although I can't talk about Paul George. He injured his hamstring yet again. That's a fascinating muscle to me. I was going to talk about platelet-rich plasma and Kobe Bryant going to Germany, but really the current news is really Paul George and how this will influence ultimately what happens with the Lakers in the second half of the season. Why does the hamstring tear in these sports of baseball, basketball, not as much in football. It happens there as well, but certainly in running sports and twisting sports and high torque sports. It's because two reasons. The hamstring, which is the muscle in the back of your thigh, crosses your hip joint and your knee joint. It's a muscle that crosses not one joint to make it move, but two joints. So tremendous amount of stress on it. But the thing that's most fascinating to me about the hamstring muscle is that it doesn't just drop from your pelvic bone straight down to your knee. Now, that would be too easy. The genius that designed our bodies, talk about engineering, whoever it is that came up with our body's idea, forget about building a Tesla. How about building your body? That hamstring muscle crosses the back of your thigh diagonally. So when it contracts, it not only extends your hip so that you can get up from a seated position, but it also flexes your knee. But because it's doing it diagonally, it's kind of like a clapper vision, like a string wrapped around a top. That diagonal position, when it contracts, it causes a twist. Just like that string, when you pull on it, spins the top. It's what allows you to spin your body and rotate in high torque to hit a baseball. Remember Puig and all the hamstring injuries he used to have, or Matt Kemp? It's because of that high torque to swing a bat, but also to get your rebound and to rotate after you get the rebound and to shoot. It's why you see it in basketball players. A lot of hamstring injuries, and that's what's happening to Paul George. Fascinating muscle, and I hope that clapper vision helped, and we'll do more when I open the clinic. The number is 877-710-ESPN. But let's get right into today's show. I want you to hear from Muggsy Bogues. This is one of the most inspiring things I've ever heard. He's 5'3", 14 years in the NBA. That's impossible. But listen to Muggsy Bogues talk about his size.
I was small. I was different from all the other players. You know, it felt like I had to adjust to them, but really they had to adjust to me because they never seen a guy my size playing against them. So, you know, that low to the floor, they had to protect the basketball. So, you know, and me understanding all this, what I'm impacting, how I'm impacting the game.
Where did it all start? It doesn't come from a good place. His dad went to prison, so his mom raised him, single mom. And his kid just wants to play basketball, but he's not growing. And the kids are teasing him. Listen to Muggsy Bogues, 55 years old now, talking about what it was like in the beginning.
But unfortunately for me, you know, being small and trying to play a sport that didn't know at the time was supposed to have been meant for a big or taller player, you know, got a lot of criticism from it, you know, a lot of backlash, a lot of name calling, you know, which could affect which confidence. At the beginning, you know, it was challenging, it was tough, you know, many days, many nights going home, just crying to my mom and just telling her how cruel the kids are out there and, you know, how mean they were, you know, and...
There's nothing like a love of a mom for her son.
But she was always, you know, always just quick to say that it had no idea what basketball was about. But she was quick to say, you know, Ty was Ty for her at the time. You know, Ty, they don't let them, you know, take your joy. If you like playing basketball, you go out there and play. You know, no one can be an expert on your life. They don't know how big your heart or know what your capabilities are. If you want to play, you just go out there and play. And at the time, I didn't know what that meant. I'm like, yeah, okay, Mom, but... You know, those things didn't register at the time. You know, I just focused more or less on the kids being so mean and cruel towards me and because I was trying to pursue a game that they thought was meant for taller players.
Your heart doesn't have a height. We all got the same size heart. That chip on his shoulder. Boy, he was going to prove to everybody. Blocking Patrick Ewing, 7 feet tall.
Your heart, you know, it measures. It pretty much doesn't have a height to it. You know, it pretty much set the tone of who you are and what you're able to accomplish. You know, and the height factor was the game of basketball. So, you know, my heart was bigger than my height. So I didn't have no hang-ups on believing that I belong with, you know, the best of the best. You know, because my heart was just as big as theirs.
What about in art? Having a chip on your shoulder because you're only 5'3" probably led to the breakup with Art Garfunkel in 1970 in the height of their music-making ability. But it was Paul Simon writing the words, putting the music together. Here's something. Can you imagine putting these two words together? It's like crispy and cream. How can it be crispy and creamy? I love these two words together. The sound of silence. Silence doesn't have a sound. Oh, my God, is this brilliant.
Hello, darkness, my old friend.
Hello, darkness, my old friend.
I've come to talk with you again.
Talking to darkness.
Because a vision softly creeping.
Vision, even though it's dark.
Left its seeds while I was sleeping. And the vision... That was planted in my brain. Still remains.
Here it comes.
Within the sound of silence. In restless dreams I walked alone.
Now, how do you come up with that music? How do you come up with those words? You got a chip on your shoulder. You're 5'3". The confidence, just like Muggsy Bogues. Here's Paul Simon on the Dick Cavett Show saying, you know, I'm writing a song right now. Maybe you can help me with the words or the music. He is fearless in his craft.
It was just something that I naturally did because I liked the music that I was listening to when I was young. That music was...
Here it is, sorry.
Here's a song I'm working on. I haven't got it finished. I'll show you. I'll go up to the point where I've stopped, all right?
All right, or maybe perhaps I can help you.
And I would appreciate your help if you could, because I've been stumped here for a while.
I finished a lyric for Stephen Sondheim once on the show, so go ahead. He didn't use it, but...
Okay. I met my old lover on the street last night. She seemed so glad to see me, I just smiled. Ugh.
And here he continues.
And that's where I'm stopped. Now... I'll give you my choices.
Okay.
These are musical choices, because lyrically, I really don't know what I have to say. Perhaps you'll give me the lyric. Mm. You give me the lyric, and I'll put the music in.
Okay.
Here I am on a D9 chord.
Does that mean anything to you? I heard that you don't know a lot about music, actually.
Who even knows what he's talking about? But he's so confident. He's got a chip on his shoulder because of his height. But he's got the confidence like Muggsy Bogues. They got to get used to me. Forget about me getting used to the NBA.
Well, I tell you what. What I'm thinking is roughly the scale that I've used in this song is based around a D scale.
Based around or around based a, on?
Well, you know, based on that. There's two sharps in the D scale, so it's based on that. Now, the one of two of the notes I haven't used in this song so far are C natural and C sharp. I haven't used them. Well, anyway, my point is that if I go to this key, when I'm changing keys, I can get these notes in that I haven't used, C and C sharp. And although the listener will not ever consciously say, those are two new notes I haven't heard, in fact, it will be refreshing to the ear.
Exactly. For someone like me who doesn't know anything about music, what he's saying is, my brain can hear if you're repeating it too much.
I imagine the same principle would hold true in comedy. You establish some kind of comedic pattern, and you do it twice. And by the time you do it once, you do it twice, it reinforces it. By the third time, you have to change it. You can't repeat something three times. It's not funny because once you hear something twice, I think you understand, you've got it.
Yeah.
By the third time, you have to alter it in order for it to be fresh, and then you can come back.
So he's being so gentle with Dick Cavett, who's kind of like a comedian. But then you can feel him put his foot down going, hey, buddy, no, let me tell you something I know.
That is true of comedy. You'll see stand-up comics who will do the same joke form three times and get away with it. But then they do it the fourth time and the audience catches on to it.
You know, I think it's not even three. I think it's two.
Maybe that's the maximum.
For my span of attention.
No, buddy, it's just two. And don't forget that. This chip on your shoulder, that confidence, that's where creativity comes. Because if you're 6'8" and you're playing volleyball, you really just go out there and hit the ball. You're taller than everybody else. But when you're 5'8", 5'10", or Muggsy Bogues 5'3", how are you going to compete against Patrick Ewing, who's 7 feet tall? This is where creativity comes from. Again, in life, when you get lemons, you make lemonade. That's what Muggsy Bogues did. That's what Paul Simon did. And that's what Matt Unger did. And coming up next, we're going to learn what it's like to have a chip on your shoulder in life that allows you to be creative and excel to a point that's unimaginable. You're listening to the one and only Weekend Warrior Show here on 710 ESPN. On the cobblestones, you're for one and feeling groovy. I don't even want to interrupt that. How beautiful. The great Paul Simon. 5'3". That gives you a chip on your shoulder. Gave it to Muggsy Bogues. Where does it come from? Joining me now, thanks for getting up early, the great Matt Unger. Matt, thanks so much for doing this.
Thanks for having me, Dr. Clapper. How's it going?
It's going great. You know, I just cannot, like all of us, can't stop thinking about Kobe. He did the promo for this show. I met him at a Cedars-Sinai function, a fundraiser, and watched him his whole career. Wilt Chamberlain made me a Laker fan. Kobe Bryant made me a season ticket holder. And each week, I just want to think about some other part of his legacy. And he played with his chip on with a chip on his shoulder. And when I thought about that, I couldn't help thinking about you. And listen, you're not, you know, sponsoring the show or anything. I'm doing this because knowing you, meeting you, watching you take care of me and my wife, and listen, the way you do business is inspiring. And then to learn about your background and what you did on the volleyball court, yeah, you had to play with a chip on your shoulder because you're not 6'8". So I thought about Kobe Bryant, and it's a compliment, playing with his chip. And I thought about you in the car business. So first question I got to ask you is, how do you do that? How do you go into a sport where you're surrounded by these giant trees and still have that desire, that fire in you that says, I don't care, they can't measure the size of my heart?
Yeah, that's a great question. And you know, a lot of people have doubted me in my career. And, you know, went out there, and then when I got that volleyball in my hand, and I just realized that, you know, anything can happen out there. That, you know, there's so many different things that go on between the wind and the sun and the heat. And, you know, practice, and I kept practicing, and that was one of the things that I just continued to do, and it was just, you know, playing against the best and always believing in yourself, and then when everybody thinks he can't, you know, I always said that I will. And I practiced against the best players out there, and they gave me the opportunity, and my partners that I played with. So it came down to, you know, really how bad you really want things in life. And so I did play with a chip on my shoulder out there quite a bit because I had no other choice. And so, you know, I yelled a little bit more than most, and I took my aggression out there on the court a little bit more. I had a lot of fire out there. So putting that all together made me who I was out there, and I needed all that to compete with the best players in the world.
Take us back. How do you beat the best player who ever played volleyball, Karch Kurai, at the Hermosa Beach Open? How do you beat him? Do you remember every single strike of the ball? Do you remember one huge play that kind of said, I think I can actually beat this guy?
So I want to tell you, before I beat Karch in the Hermosa Open, him and Adam Johnson, I probably have lost probably 25 times in a row to him, with him and Kent Steffens practicing against him. So I had a lot of times practicing against him and losing. And then also, I played against him in a lot of times when I first came on tour, when he was the number one and number two seeds, always. So I had a lot of chances against him. And, you know, before I even beat him, Dr. Clapper, I had a lot of opportunities to win and didn't win. And so, you know, closing out games, and I wasn't one of those things where you said, oh, I'm going to go out and beat Karch. It was play by play. Mm-hmm. Against Karch, you think you're going to go out there and just beat him, you're going to get hammered. So the question is, it's play by play. It was a very tight game. And, you know, I wasn't used to making winning plays. And you know, my partner and I, Lee LeGrand, we made some winning plays at the end of that game at 13-all, where it was, you know, times before that, we missed and had chances. But that's how you do it. That's how you prove it. You have to go out there and do it. And then you get to be a winner against somebody that's won so many times in their life.
I think everything we do in our life, the surfing I do, the art history that I studied that led to patents, it's just so interesting to look back on your life and make the connections of everything that you do. What is it about being a world-class, world-record holder volleyball player that allows you to make a successful car dealership? You think the two have nothing to do with each other, but probably being on a team, making a successful team, you're good at that, and you bring that to the car business, or are there other things that I'm missing?
No, absolutely right. Number one, having a great team. I've had great teammates my whole life. I've built great teams around both Toyota and Lexus here in Santa Monica. And I basically take what I've learned in sports and brought that into the car business, and you know, the leadership and the hard work that I put in, just like I put in, and the repetitions that I put in on a daily routine, on an hourly routine. What I did, well, you know, my office was the beach volleyball court. Now I'm sitting in my office today, and I take each day and I try to fill it with as many, you know, relationships and business and how many things. And, you know, I've known you for a long time, and I take whatever I learned on the beach and I brought that into my business world, and it's really taken off because, you know, you bring the right group around you, you have your leadership, and, you know, that's what I've done, and I've done that for, you know, over 25 years in the car business, and just loving every day, and every day's different, and I just love the business that I'm in today.
It definitely comes through. And like I say, this is not a paid endorsement. You're just really special. I want to know who you are, though. What did your dad do for a living? How did this all happen? How you could have played basketball. You could have played football. Where did the volleyball come from? What did your mom do for a living? I want to learn about you and where'd you grow up.
Okay. So, yeah, we grew up in the West Side. My dad was a toy salesman and manufacturer.
Wow.
So he ran his own business. My mom worked for him for a long time. But my dad and mom both went to UCLA. My dad played volleyball with Al Skates, who was a legendary volleyball coach at Al Skates. When the first few years that they had a volleyball team, Al Skates and my dad played together at UCLA. So that's kind of where it came. And my mom was also a good athlete, good softball player. And that's where kind of the athletics came from. And the drive that I had, I saw my dad go to work every day. You know, he used to drive downtown and get up at 5 o'clock in the morning. And I've kind of replicated that. Have to get up early, have two kids, and got to make it all happen and then also get back to see him. So that's kind of where it came from.
I want to ask you, with the tragedy to Kobe, what did Kobe's life mean to you?
Oh, my God. That's a great question, and I've heard that a lot. So Kobe and his hard work and dedication on and off the court, and I met Kobe several times, and how outgoing and cool he was. And, you know, later in his career, you know, he really, really started to recognize more people. And you know, he was just such a killer on the court. And so, you know, he meant so much to me. I saw pretty much every championship that he was in, we had some tickets in. And so, you know, as I look back at Kobe, his hard work, his dedication to his craft and his sport that inspired me through the whole time that I've watched him. And, you know, and then he took that into, you know, his family life and all the things that I look up to and saw what he did after he was playing sports and what he was doing. And, you know, just the same thing I want to do. I mean, I'm coaching my kids and doing all the things as being the best father I can be. And so I look at his overall life as just that what I saw in him and what I think of myself and what we do. And we're a lot alike as far as not our accomplishments, but it's who we are as people. And that'll live with me forever.
I mean, crying when you heard on that Sunday, it's just, I can't get it out of my head. I don't know. I mean, and I think the more I talk about it, maybe that'll soothe the pain, but it's really been difficult. I can only imagine what it's like for all of us. I mean, but it's really been tough. So until I can make it past each and every show, I'm going to start off thinking about what's part of his legacy that touches me. And you have a bit of it, because I can just imagine, I can just feel the fire that lights up in you. And I almost love having a problem that the car needs to be serviced so I get to talk to you, because to find out what you're up to. And you never say, no, it's not possible. You always are there. And let me tell you, going to the operating room, that's what you want, with the people next to you assisting you and the nurses. Being able to call you knowing you're always going to be there to fix whatever I need is special. You know, you're really special. Your dealership and all the people you make me interact with, they're all top flight, because they don't want to disappoint you. And that is a born leader. Matt, you're incredible, man. Max Kellerman. I can't let you go without asking you about him. Uh-huh. Tell us about Max Kellerman.
So Max has been a good friend and a client for a long time, and I kind of miss him not being here on the left side. But I always get my inside in boxing with Max, and Max knows so much about boxing. I mean, you could ask him any question about boxing in any round. You know, the Hearns-Hagler fight, no matter what it is, he will dissect it that round by round for you. He's like most incredible articulate man that I've seen and met in that boxing world that I've ever seen. So, you know, whenever I talk about Max and stuff like that, I always catch, and I still text him and talk to him about getting insight on any upcoming fights and what he thinks.
Yeah, he's amazing, because on my cell phone, Dr. Klepper, I'm in an airport right now. I just rolled my ankle. What should I do? It's like I'm getting on the plane right now. He's just really, we miss him here in Los Angeles, but we still get to see him on First Take. Matt Unger, I want to thank you so much. Your career and everything that you do inspires all of us, and it's really a pleasure. I'm sure if you told me you moved to Mazda, I would now have a Mazda instead of a Lexus, but I have a Lexus because of you. So thanks so much.
Hey, thanks for having me, Dr. Klepper. Okay. Anytime, buddy.
My pleasure. That's the great Matt Unger. His heart of a champion, the chip on his shoulder, and everything that he does, it reminded me about what it takes from Muggsy Bogues, Paul Simon, and certainly honoring the legacy of Kobe Bryant. All right, coming up next, I'll open up the clinic. The number is 877-710-ESPN. You're listening to the one and only Weekend Warriors show here on 710 ESPN. Run out of bed and join the family station. Oh, this is going to be fun, Steve Bellette. Investigation. All the bumper music is going to be Paul Simon songs. Nothing wrong with that, buddy. And that's because he has a heart of a champion. He's 5'3", same height as Muggsy Bogues. Go play in the NBA and you're 5'3". At Charlotte, he played with Manute Bol, 7'7", 28-inch difference in height. They did three Sports Illustrated covers, I think. But don't tell Muggsy Bogues he's short. He'll say, "My heart is just as big as yours." I just love that. What an attitude. And it makes me smile because that is Kobe's attitude. He didn't care he had God-given talent. He was going to play like he was the 12th man on the bench. The drive. Just beautiful. Speaking of beautiful, I spent this week on vacation surfing in Hawaii. A couple of days, it was raining. Okay, you'd think I'm in my hotel room feeling sorry for myself that I'm in Hawaii and it's raining. And I don't mean rain. I mean torrential downpour. But guess where I was? I was a half a mile in the middle of the ocean when that rain came. And as I was paddling back out to the lineup, half a mile out in the water, looking at the rainbow going from one horizon line to the other, catching a wave on my board with the water pouring on top of my head. And I'm saying to myself, this has got to be the closest you can get to being in the womb of Mother Nature. Because I'm on the ocean water being dumped on with torrential rain water as I'm firing through on the surface of the ocean. It was just incredible. Then a baby sea turtle came up next to me. It was epic. As far as I'm concerned, there's only two places to go on vacation. Italy and Hawaii. That's it. God bless the rest of the world. But you're going on vacation, that's all you need to do. And while I was out there, I met an old friend of mine way out in the ocean. He lives on the Outer Banks off of Carolina. And he comes for a few months every year out to Hawaii. And I surf at the same spot with him. And he was telling me about this buddy of his and his answering machine. Like, I can't believe I'm talking to a guy about an answering machine and the message he has on his answering machine. He said, "Robbie, my closest friend, his name is Will. And we nicknamed him Will the Thrill because he's a real fun guy to be around." I said, "Okay." As I'm looking at the horizon, seeing the next apartment buildings that are going to roll in as these giant waves are coming, I said, "Okay, you got a friend named Will and you call him Will the Thrill. That's interesting." He goes, "Yeah, but what's really interesting is that his answering machine, he recorded, and it says this, because everyone knows him as Will the Thrill. His answering machine starts by saying, 'The thrill is gone. Leave your number.'" Will the Thrill, his answering machine. The thrill is gone. I just thought that was hilarious. These are the things you talk about while you're out there on the ocean, going up and down the waves, waiting for the big, as Duke Kahanamoku called it, the bluebird to come, the biggest wave of the day. And you paddle and paddle and paddle, and all of a sudden you feel the hand of God grab your board. And it's like God taps you on the shoulder and says, "All right, Robbie, you can stop paddling now. I'll take over from here." And you get up on your knees, you get up on your feet, and you stand in on this energy like a three-story apartment building going down the face of the wave with the spray in your face going 90 miles an hour like on a Kawasaki motorcycle. It was one wave. I just put both my arms up in the air. It was just like heroic. I think that's the message in life. It's not the audience, although I very much appreciate the congregation that is the Weekend Warrior. But in the end, we are each just an island to ourselves. You can have a spouse, you can have kids, but actually you're here by yourself. And what you want to do with your life is make yourself proud of you. So as I'm riding down that wave, Talk about the thrill is gone. The thrill is inside me to be able to ride that water. Ah, great. And it's February, and you don't have to wear a wetsuit. It's special. All right, let's take a call. Let's go to David in Huntington Beach. You're on with Dr. Clapper. How can I help?
Hey, how you doing, Doc?
I just love talking about surfing. I hope everybody else appreciates it because it's really special.
Well, oh, yes, sir.
You're in Huntington Beach. You're like Surf City. Do you surf?
Well, I tried.
How the hell can you live in Huntington Beach and not surf, David? I'm going to come down there and arrest you.
Actually, you're gonna see my knee in a couple of months. That's why I'm not surfing, because I got tore ACL right now.
Okay. My God, I have been doing so many ACLs. I am so busy. Mammoth Mountain, God bless it. I mean, it generates. Soon I'm going to start asking. Right now I ask people, what mountain? Is it Vail? Is it Whistler? Is it Mammoth? Where'd you tear your ACL? Now I'm going to start to ask them, which run at Mammoth did you tear your ACL? That's how crazy it's getting. But anyway, it's one of the most successful operations when done right. There's a book I wrote with Lindy Huey called Heal Your Knees, which is all about my philosophy that if you're going to fix your ACL, in my opinion, different than other people, you should use your own body parts, your own patella tendon as the graft and not a cadaver. But there are many people who have their own opinions, so we can talk about that another time. How can I help you? You're 53. What do you do for a living?
I'm a teacher, sir. We talked a couple of weeks ago.
Oh, all right. You don't have to find a total stranger. You're amazing. All right. You got an MRI of your elbow. What happened?
Okay. So where do you want me to read from, sir?
The impression. Not findings. Read from the impression and go slow so I can translate.
Yes, sir. Osteoarthritis elbow joint with associated effusion. No articular. Thank you. Loose body.
Okay. So remember the MMA fighter, Anderson Silva, the spider?
Yes, sir.
So I can say that I operated on him because he actually called into the show, so it's not a HIPAA violation. Otherwise, I wouldn't talk about it. But he was one of the greatest athletes in MMA at the height of his career. He, because he used to use his elbows a lot, had a problem at some point where he couldn't straighten it. And I did an X-ray MRI, and he actually had chips of bone in his elbow joint that were blocking, like kind of, here's a Clapper vision, kind of like a doorstop, right? You want to keep the door from closing. You stick that triangular wedge at the bottom of the door, and then it can't open. Well, that's what happens when pieces of cartilage and bone break off, these bone spurs break off. And if they're floating in the joint, they become like mini doorstops and block the door from opening and closing. They block the range of motion of the joint. And I arthroscoped his elbow, took out these three marbles basically from his elbow, and then he went and won three more championships. So you don't have the chips floating. That's what that study is saying. But you do have the beginnings of damage to the brake pad. You're not into the rotors per se, but you're getting close, and that's what the description is. I've done elbow replacements, but I generally would do them in patients who are rheumatoid arthritis, not a big, strong guy like you, David, who's going to still want to lift things. So the option of putting metal and plastic or ceramic and plastic into your joint is not an option. Your elbow and shooting it with all kinds of shots and other cockamamie things they're going to want to tell you to do, forget about it. The elbow's a tough one. Yes, there's muscles above and below it, kind of like your knee, that you can make stronger and you can live happily ever after without an operation. But if ever there was a time to, in your case, delete activities that are stressing the precious cartilage that remains in your joint, and so delete the bad exercise and increase the good exercise, this is a beautiful case for you to learn the right exercises to keep doing, delete the bad exercises, and when you do rough and tough activities, wearing a simple neoprene sleeve, you can buy it at the CVS pharmacy and whatnot, that to me would be the greatest way for you to handle arthritis in your elbow.
Sorry, now it did say more in the impressions. Do you want more?
Yeah, go ahead.
Tendinosis proximal fibers of the common flexor and extensor tendon at the epicondylus, no evidence of significant tear.
Right. So you've got, at 53, you're working hard your whole life. Is this your dominant arm?
No, sir.
Good.
It's my
Thank God it's not your dominant arm. So we're going to give credit to your grandmother, your grandfather, because they gave you the DNA at Cedars-Sinai. We call it altacacaritis. You're getting a little old, so the tendon is drying up a little bit. And instead of being beautifully elastic like a brand new bungee cord, your tendon is a little like the bungee cord in the back of my Toyota pickup truck, because I leave it outside and I use it to wrap my surfboard out of the back of the truck in the sunlight for 10 years. That bungee cord is a little bit shva, as we say in Yiddish. You know, it's a little bit dried up. It's not that brisk, brand new, out of the package bungee cord. Your tendon is a little shva. It's a little dried out. It's tendinopathy, and it's microscopically tearing. But you do not need an operation like Ben Roethlisberger, who ripped his flexor tendon, you know, right off the bone. Yours is just deteriorating. You would do very well. Not with cortisones. Don't let them give you shots, but with a strengthening program. And a good physical therapist would be fantastic for you. Keep reading.
Well, sir, I am an athlete. I play college ball. I do, you know, hot yoga 4 times a week.
So you have to be careful. I mean, I love hot, you know, great, good for the hot yoga. But if there's a lot of weight bearing that you're doing, you would be a guy with this elbow, David. Stop doing push-ups. You know what I mean? Stop doing all the downward dog and all the other cockamamie things that they got you doing, because you're using your elbow as a weight-bearing joint. It doesn't appreciate it. You may say, well, I've always been able to do that. I am not the one to argue with. Talk to your elbow. So less weight-bearing through your elbow, learning the good exercise for your biceps, your triceps, and your forearm muscles, your I can go through all the different forearm muscles, but you should meet up with a good physical therapist. Deleting the bad exercise, increasing the nurturing will allow you to live happily ever after, in my opinion, with this elbow. Okay?
Yes, sir.
All right, David. God bless you for being a teacher, and we really appreciate it. I'm going to take a break, pay some bills, and we'll talk to you when you need me again, David. I appreciate it. You're listening to the one and only Weekend Warriors Show here on 710 ESPN. In a way, slips out in a way. Steve, you know, on the podcast, they don't play the Kobe promo. I don't know why we can't do that. Interesting. All right, Warriors, welcome back. So excited to be here. I can't believe an hour's already in the books, practically. Yeah, don't forget, Steve Paulette put together a Weekend Warrior Facebook page. All you have to do is type in Weekend Warrior in the search, and then you're going to see my picture. And as they say, I got a face for radio. Remember, I told you, one day I came home, I lifted my shirt up after work. My mother was still alive in my house. She looked at me and she said, "Since when did you become a sumo wrestler?" Made me put my shirt on right away. Only your mother can say that. All right, let's go to Joe in San Diego. I got about a minute left. How are you, Joe?
Hey, Dr. Crawford, good. Nice to talk to you again.
Always a pleasure. Thanks so much. What's up with you?
Not too much. I talked to you, remember, about 9 months ago. I have leg calf Perthes. And you talked to me. You gave me the analogy about Toluca Lake and being avascular necrosis.
That's called a clapper vision, Joe.
Yes, sir. Yeah.
So what's happening with you and your leg Perthes?
Tuesday morning, I'm having a total hip arthroplasty.
Okay.
Yeah, I just wanted to call and say thanks because you gave me a lot of encouragement. I was just very nervous about the whole situation. But once I told you that I had started taking Motrin every night before work, because I'm an X-ray tech,
right?
And you're saying no, you don't want to be taking Motrin every night. So I just wanted to call and just tell you thank you again. I appreciate the encouragement.
You're very welcome.
Phone call.
Listen, yeah. I became a doctor to meet people like you, even if it's just over the radio. Isn't that crazy? You and I are never going to meet each other, and maybe someday we'll meet, but we haven't met already. And yet I'm able to guide you, which is great. Listen, have good luck with the surgery. Tell the surgeon I'm looking over his shoulder. He better do it perfect, because we got Dr. Clapper looking over his shoulder. And there's a book I wrote with Linda Yue, Heal Your Hips. Make sure once they give you the green light, maybe it's 6 weeks after the surgery, that the skin is beautifully healed. Then it's safe for you to get back into the swimming pool. It'll be a great way for you to rehab. And keep in touch with us, Joe. You're a good man, and we'll be praying for you.
Thanks so much, Dr. Clapper, and you guys have a great day, okay?
All right, God bless you. We appreciate it, Joe. Good luck to you. All right, Warriors, we'll take a break. Coming back, I'll tell some stories. Stories about what Kobe taught us about having a chip on your shoulder. You could be 5'3" and be Muggsy Bogues, and you know you still want to play basketball against the likes of Patrick Ewing, who's 7 feet tall. Who could imagine that one day you'd have a statistic that you blocked the shot of Patrick Ewing and your Muggsy Bogues, or that you're Paul Simon and you're 5'3", and you come from Queens, New York, where I'm from, and you can change the whole music world in the 20th century forever. Chip on your shoulder. Creativity. That's what Kobe taught us. He may have all the talent in the world, but he played like he was the 12th man off the bench. It just feels so good to keep talking about Kobe Bryant. You're listening to the one and only Weekend Warriors Show here on 710 ESPN.